I am very proud of that Outward does really well is that every single person in the team, including myself, a platform person, has a seat at the table, and we debate and we discuss the opportunities that come through, and we really create the space for people to have a voice, and to debate the company. So I think that that plays a huge role as well.
So Darcy has to be one of the most interesting guests that I've had on the pod so far. She's very passionate about what she does in her VC platform role, and even more excited, if you'll believe it, about how her fund backs founders. And if you're in fintech, chances are you've heard about her fund already. Darcy leads platform at Outward VC, which invests predominantly in UK early stage businesses and businesses that operate in the fintech space. I honestly can't wait for you to listen to all the gems that she shared with us. Enjoy.
You've now arrived at your destination.
Darcy, super happy to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, when I, came across you a few weeks, or maybe I think it was last month, I found your background super interesting. And then I read about the fund that you were at, and how you folks operate within the fund also seemed a bit unique and different to what I've seen with other similar funds, at least in the US and Canada. So I just had to have you on as a guest on the pod. So welcome.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. So let's get the audience just as excited as I am. Kind of curious around, your introduction and just telling us what you do and who you are.
Yeah, so who I am, I was born in South Africa. My parents actually moved over in the early 20s. So I have an Irish heritage, but a South African born, so a good mix of two great cultures. And I think it was that my Irish roots that really led me to leave South Africa. I was always curious to discover more of the world. And I studied in Scotland. I always followed my passion, so the things that I was interested in, which led me to study history of art at university. So completely unrelated to venture capital and platform. Yeah, and I guess my whole career has kind of been summarized by keeping an open mind, following my passion, building relationships, and running hard and fast when the opportunities opened up. And that's really what led me to my platform role at Outward.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those characteristics of yours, Darcy, align very well with your role, being head of platform, right? So, but I have a question before that. I've had the privilege of speaking to a lot of VC platform professionals. What I'm finding the common thread so far is that everybody has very unique backgrounds. Not everybody had a private equity background or a finance background before coming into VC. And in your case, art history, super interesting. So how did you land in the VC world from learning art history? I'm very super curious how that trend went.
I mean, it's completely unrelated. And I think it ties back to my earlier point around always keeping an open mind and seizing the opportunities when they cross your path. And many people that I speak to often ask me this question of how did you get into VC with the expectation that there's, a set path or a clear way that people can enter this industry. And for me, there wasn't. And I've met a lot of people where they have a similar view. But I'll tell you my story, which is that after studying history of art, I then went to business school to broaden my horizons, again, keeping as many paths open as possible until I really figured out what I wanted to do and dedicate my life to. And then post studying my master's, I got a job at a bank. So I thought I would try out financial services. I was seeking something creative in financial services because naturally I'm more inclined to that kind of work and creative people. And luckily, I found Outward through working at Investec. So Investec is a cornerstone LP in our first fund. And I had the opportunity to spend 3 months with the Outward team. That got extended a further 3 months, then extended 6 months. And 4 years later, I'm still here. And really, what I did when I joined the team was just find as many gaps as possible. So at the time when I joined, they didn't have a website, the fund was just being set up. I put my hand up and just started building and creating things for them and plugging the gaps and learning where I could. And if I look back in hindsight, that was actually probably the perfect opportunity to run platform because I got to see how many different parts and areas of of the fund operate. And I think that makes me quite efficient and useful in my role today, because I work across so many areas.
Yeah, you sound like an early stage startup founder, you know, just making sure, doing whatever needs to get done in order to keep the ball moving and to push the needle forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as I said, when I joined Outward, you know, we were 2 weeks away from the first close of the fund. So I haven't been there from the very beginning, but definitely from the early days.
That brings up a good point then. So maybe what did that first week or first 2 week feel like? And I'm very early on in my career, and I've worked at two companies so far, both pretty big companies. The first week can become, there's two strands in my opinion. One is you take it easy. You look at the first week, you look at the second week, and you think, you know what, I have enough time to mesh in, you know, there's time for everything. But then there's a second type of people who say, no, first week is when I hit the ground running, because this is when first impression matters and I need to absorb as much as I can from day one. My gut tells me you're the type two, but would love to know what that first second or first month and everything, how did it feel, and how did you not get super overwhelmed being super new to VC?
Well, I would correct you there and change the word week to maybe months. The first few months were extremely overwhelming. This was a completely new industry that I actually didn't know a lot about. I had to learn the culture, learn about different brands in the industry, how things operate, how things work. Each fund is so different. And also you're constantly being surrounded by some of the smartest people in their fields. So I suffered massively from imposter syndrome. Also, I was new to finance as well, coming from an art history background. So I was really trying to figure out, how can I add value in this industry when I'm surrounded by such greatness? And then in terms of, like, specifically to Outward, what it was like for me, there were so many firsts for me, but at the same time, there were so many firsts for my fund. So I got to be there for the first close. I was sitting in the room when we invested in our third company. So when I look back now, I'm so grateful that I was a part of those moments, because I can see how far we've come as a fund. And I really feel like a founding member of the team, having, you know, lived through some of those milestone experiences for our team. It's been extremely rewarding having seen all of that, and we've progressed a lot. And I think as a team, we have a huge sense of ownership and where the brand has come today.
That's a great story. That's genuinely a great story. Yeah, I can yeah, and I can sense the sense of ownership and a good, healthy level of pride in your voice as well. And it shows to me, to be very direct and honest with you, it shows to me how connected you feel with the team and also with the purpose of building the fund. Personally, I sometimes ask if I'm in the right line of work. I always do this every few months. I'll ask myself, Mash, is this something that you're interested in doing for the next 5, 7, 8, 10 years? Because I personally feel that if you're not in it for the long run, if your heart's not in it, it's just really hard to keep working more than 10 hours a day towards whatever it is that you're on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a beauty in joining a fund at the beginning, just as it is like joining a startup, where so much has still to be created. So you can see yourself in certain processes or small wins and victories, because the team is so small and everything is being done for the first time, that there's a real sense of pride in that. And that's what keeps our team motivated for sure. And the GPs are quite unique in that, you know, everybody has ownership in the fund and the carry, and everybody is well incentivized. And I think that's a real game changer when it comes to Outward.
Yeah. I do have a question for you. And this is something I've struggled with in the past. Imposter syndrome. It's so tough, right? Because your mind tells you that you may or may not be the right person to answer a question. Someone more senior or more experienced or smarter than me wants a response or wants help, but I'm not really sure if I'm qualified to help out. Is there a better person on my team? Oh, what do I say? I imagine in those, not weeks, but months at Outward, you felt that way, right?
Absolutely.
Talk to us about it. Like, how did that feel, and how did you over time overcome that? Because it's a very powerful piece there.
I think I felt it immensely, especially because I didn't seek, you know, I didn't seek a role in venture capital. And it's also an industry where so many people want to work in venture capital. And you end up speaking to lots of people that are, you know, interested in pursuing a career in this industry. And you kind of then sit back going, well, you know, why me? Why did I find my place here when there's so many other people that might, you know, seem to want it more than I did at the outset? So that was a piece of it which I eventually dropped and got over, because it's a bit of a waste of your time and energy to be fixating on that. But I think what imposter syndrome does do is it makes you completely self-aware of where you are. I listened a lot when I started my job, and I always think that that is a good thing, and it's something that I do to this day. Listening to how my colleagues speak to founders, how do they interact on investment committee meetings, how do they interact with investors. So I think I just try to soak up as much as I could to feel more confident in those conversations and feel like I had more of a position and a voice at the table. And then I think it just comes with time, and it comes with confidence, and you get the recognition from your team.
True.
And then it starts to slowly dissipate. And that is why another thing I would really recommend with people that are suffering from imposter syndrome, get the feedback. You might be avoiding it because the narrative in your head is that you might not be good enough or not deserving of something, or you're going to be found out. Ask for the feedback, because then it doesn't become about your own internal narrative. It becomes about what's actually happening in reality. And if those things are positive, that's the narrative you hold on to.
I love this. I love the last part.
Thanks.
Because I think, honestly, Darcy, for me personally, I do have that inner voice saying, oh, Mash, maybe you could have done a better job. You didn't receive any negative comments, but that doesn't mean they weren't thinking anything negative. Oh, Mash, I wish we were more prepared. And I always have that voice in me, especially when I'm trying to punch above my weight class or do something I've never done before. But the last piece is that you mentioned, which is focusing a little bit less on that inner voice, but then really relating to reality and asking folks for feedback around the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. And then using that to ultimately become a better person at the job. And then over time, the recognitions help erase some of that, that syndrome, right? So I love that last piece. Super, super interesting stuff. Yeah,
absolutely. And also the fact that you're working with such talented and smart people on the founder side, they are the experts. So you will never know more than them. And you're not expected to either. You're expected to ask the right questions. So I think it's about just accepting that and leaning into that. It's not a weakness per se, but leaning into the fact that you know less and being comfortable with it allows you to not focus on feeling insecure about that, but actually embracing it.
This is such a good piece of like feedback and advice, especially for folks who are getting into VC and or getting into platform and feel that they may or may not, quote unquote, belong in that new place from day one or month one, right? So thank you so much for that. Let's maybe dive into your awesome, awesome fund called Outward VC. Tell us a little bit about what the fund is, bit of history, bit of background. And through your tenure, I'd love to know, you know, how you've seen the fund evolve and where it is today. Very excited.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we're very clear about who we are and what we invest in. We are based in London in the UK, and we invest predominantly in UK early stage businesses and businesses that are operating in the fintech space. When we invest is when companies are raising between £2 and £5 million. The reason for that is because that tends to be the hardest round for fintech companies to raise. They have generated some traction to evidence that the product or service that they're creating is needed, either validated through one or two customers or proof of concept, but they haven't yet hit those revenue milestones that a Series A investor would like and expect to see. And the reason why we find fintechs are kind of getting into this funding gap is because it just sometimes takes longer for fintech businesses to scale. They're more expensive to build, and often there's bigger hurdles. So becoming regulated is one clear example of that.
Interesting.
You know, having to hire very expensive people, heads of compliance, etc. So we believe that we have the insight and the expertise and the domain expertise specifically in fintech to spot these companies before they've hit that milestone round. We come in, we're a very meaningful investor. We get our hands, you know, very dirty with the companies, and we pride ourselves in being an extremely helpful partner, and then support those companies to get to that milestone round. And then we would follow on and back them in their A and their B, potentially their C. But we're really with them on that journey at that specific funding gap.
Your brand identity is so, so evident in your voice and how you explain who you are. It's very interesting. I think you're the first VC platform professional I've spoken to who described their fund in such a way. Kind of curious.
Probably
then,
because I'm on many fundraising calls.
So it's all like scripted in your mind right now. Perfect. I love it. Talk to me about the conviction that you guys need when you're investing, right? Because if I understand you have the domain expertise, you and your team, and perhaps you're able to spot things that other funds may not be able to simply because you have the domain expertise and you have the right individuals on your team to understand the company and the market and what exactly they're building and the growth projection over the next 2 to 3 years for that specific startup, I'm guessing. But out of all that, Darcy, it seems like you need a lot of conviction going into these funding rounds with these startups. Talk to us about how that works and, you know, how you feel and some signs that you look for when you're maybe investing in these kinds of startups.
Yeah. Well, I would say each company is different. They're all solving for different problems. And so it's really on a case-by-case basis. But I think some of the things that I can distill and take away from our entire portfolio is we leverage our team expertise. And keep in mind now, you know, we see around 80 relevant companies operating in fintech a month. So you start to pattern recognition is a big thing.
Noted.
You might be looking at a company and you've seen 6 or 10 others that are building in the same space, and you're kind of learning what's the success factor there. Is it their go to market, or is this team better to execute on the product? So you have that kind of context when you're looking at an investment opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's because we're very focused on fintech.
Yeah.
And then building conviction as well comes into our process within the team. So we leverage our investors who have invested in our fund. A lot of them have fintech domain expertise. Mm-hmm. We lean on them. We do some reference calls with them, and we've got a hyper-relevant fintech network around us. Sometimes we speak to our own founders when investing in another business because they might know about the space, or they might be experiencing a challenge that company is looking to solve for. And then the most important pillar is really how we debate that as a team and build conviction as a team. And it's never a slam dunk. There's always discussion and debate about why a company might or might not succeed. And something that I am very proud of that Outward does really well is that every single person in the team, including myself, a platform person, has a seat at the table, and we debate and we discuss the opportunities that come through, and we really create the space for people to have a voice and to debate the company. So I think that plays a huge role as well.
Seems like your team really puts a lot of focus and weight on stress testing your assumptions, bringing in the right expertise, whether or not it's within the VC, the Outward VC team, or maybe it's within the extended circle of founders and LPs and et cetera that you may be connected to, in order to fully get as much perspective as possible on a deal, on a founder, and or on a market. So that's pretty encouraging to learn about and to see how you folks are operating at Outward.
Yeah, no, it's we're very proud of it.
Yeah, super exciting. So maybe let's double click on the VC platform piece, right? given that you're head of platform at Outward, I'd love to kind of understand how you're operating the platform piece differently than other funds, and what are some core areas today at Outward where the platform team and yourself are very proud of? You know, what are some functions or what are some opportunities that you provide startups after you invest in them, and how does that look like? Very curious to learn.
Yeah. So, I mean, and maybe for anyone listening that's looking at entering the platform space within VC, mm-hmm. the thing that I would flag and note is that platform is very different at every fund that you'll go into, and it's influenced by the size of the fund, the size of the platform team, or maybe it's influenced by the USP of that certain fund, so what they really, you know, pride themselves on in the market. So at Outward, I believe platform is very much specific to Outward, and right now, because we are still such a young fund, we're 4 years old, platform has a long way to go in terms of really building it out. And my role right now as head of platform covers brand, it covers portfolio engagement, and it covers investor relations. And I cannot do all those things at any given time. So really it's driven by the priorities of the fund at a certain point of time, and certain things get dialed up and other things get dialed down. Right now, what's been dialed up is our fundraise. We're launching our second fund next year, so very heavily invested in that. So when I think of, you know, platform traditionally, it's mainly around that portfolio connectivity piece. And so with limited time and resource, it becomes even more important to double down on what is it that makes Outward different? Why would a founder want us on their cap table? And how can we deliver on that? So as much as it is about putting effort into the things that are going to deliver on your USP, it's even more important to say no to things that just aren't really going to move the needle. Because you can't do everything.
Yeah.
If you have a larger fund, sure, you're going to have platform where there's going to be someone on events, there's going to be someone on recruiting, etc. We don't have that luxury, so we double down on what is our USP. And something that I'll draw to as an example is, you know, we have around 50 founders and C-suite in our Fund One portfolio that have all been operating within fintech. They're building a fintech business, and we're trying to leverage the insights, the knowledge, the experience that hyper-relevant network all, you know, kind of has. So we're connecting founders who are experiencing a particular problem. It might be, you know, B2B sales. We're connecting them with a more advanced company on our portfolio who's sold into banks and who's gone through the pain point, so that they can have the conversation and benefit from that unique kind of proprietary knowledge. So it's about connecting the dots in hyper-relevant ways and giving them something that no other fund can because of our unique network.
Yeah, and it almost sounds like you, because of this network of 50 founders, and maybe even more next year when you raise your next fund and you start deploying, you almost have access to this unique data set of founders who've been there, done that. And especially, I imagine that in a space with as much regulation as fintech, if I'm an early stage founder, it would be so meaningful if I received funding from Outward and I was able to then talk to somebody who's literally had the exact same challenge, where I'm just like, oh, who do I talk to? How much do I spend? Do I need an expensive lawyer? Is this an in-house effort? And I can imagine how founders find that super beneficial, being plugged into your ecosystem and having access to these 50 different founders or more.
Yeah, absolutely. And access to the investment team. They get very involved in the companies, and they will be the first touch point, because they hold a lot of the knowledge. We share a lot of knowledge across the team so that everybody is empowered to help companies. And then when relevant, we bring it to the founders, because you don't want to be taking up too much time whilst founders are building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another interesting thing I was thinking about whilst you were talking, is that you have to build relationships with founders in order to create a valuable network and ecosystem. If you don't provide value to their business or show up in times where it's really hard, and this is on the whole team, they're not going to sacrifice an hour or two to speak to your younger portfolio company, because, you know, why would they? So it's first and foremost, it's about building relationships. That's the most important. And then it's about building trust, giving back so that you can get in return.
It must have taken a lot of effort, time, and commitment and energy over you said you're a 4-year-old fund.
Mm-hmm.
The first 2 or 3, or maybe the first 4 years, building those relationships, being as helpful as you can to every founder in your portfolio, and then building that trust, which takes a lot of time. It does snowball over time, and after maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years, it becomes much easier. But I imagine that the first few years must have been so, so hard in establishing that trust, because it's effort. You know, it's blood, sweat, and tears. It's not hand-wavy magic stuff, right? So I can imagine the effort that went into establishing that.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's on the whole team, really. Yeah. And that's the reputation that you start to build in the market slowly over time by being there for founders and showing up in the hard times.
Yeah.
And, you know, something that I love about our team, and it kind of typifies our culture, is we really punch above our weight.
So maybe let's zoom out a bit and then just talk about VC platform as a whole, Darcy. You know, you've joined this fund when it was in its initial stages, and then being head of platform now, when you look at the VC platform space in general, you know, funds in the US, funds in Europe, funds in UK, how are you seeing this space evolve over the last few years, and where do you see this going? Kind of curious to pick on that.
Yeah, I think it's evolved tremendously over the past few years. I've been actively involved in those communities probably for only around a year. And when I attend those events, the thing that you hear is, you know, last year when we hosted this event, we had 20 people. Now we have 100 people. So even the people that are at the forefront of platform are commenting on how it's changing and evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So that's amazing. And at all of those events, you hear so many different perspectives from people that are working at funds. And the key takeaway is that it is just so different at every fund. But the amazing thing is that the community is so forthcoming with information, knowledge, resources, networks. I'm on a platform WhatsApp group for Europe, and post one question, you'll get 10 replies.
No way.
With offers to introduce you to various people. And I know that is very big in the US. The US is probably leading on that front. But it's a very exciting space. And I think there's many opportunities for a number of different types of people.
I've got a strange but interesting question for you, Darcy. Why do you think that is? Why do you think people in platform, like, what drives, I wouldn't say curiosity because that's a given, but what drives this helpfulness behavior? Because I've noticed this myself. You know, I'll reach out to folks who work in platform, and they're very open to coming on a podcast and talking about who they are and how they want to be helpful. I just feel folks in platform are more helpful, they're kinder, they're more open to experiences. What I'm asking you is, why do you think that is? What do you think drives this this kind of very warm character? Kind of curious.
I mean, I would say I've experienced it across the whole VC landscape. It's a very collaborative industry, and you have more to gain when you have stuff to share.
Interesting stuff. So I guess maybe we can then close off with some rapid fire questions, Darcy. The questions are a bit odd / strange, but I'm super curious to hear your responses. So I'll throw them at you. So it's more around, you know, your personal habits or your personal likings. So let's start with your favorite pizza topping. What is it?
Avocado.
You know, when I read that, or when I knew about that, when I heard it, I was so weirded out. Why avocado? Like, I've seen that here in Toronto. You can actually see that in restaurants, avocado topping, and I always skip because it makes no sense to me. So what's the mystery?
I think it's a South African thing. You'll always see avocado on pizza in South Africa. I'll just make a note that it's always cold. It goes on at the end. It doesn't get put into the pizza oven. And yeah, recommend it before you knock. I try it before you knock it.
All right. You know what? I'll actually try it. I promise you I'll try it. Favorite book?
4,000 Weeks. It changed my perspective on how I think about time and leaning into the fact that time is finite. And it also completely changed the perspective of my partner's understanding of that. So it's a very influential book. We actually gave it to all of our founders as a gift last year.
Interesting. 4,000 Weeks. I'll look into it. Is it, would you say it's a literally like a random guess, is it more about productivity or self-help book?
I would say it's well, on average you have 4,000 weeks to live.
Oh, what?
And yeah.
All right. Wow.
The average person lives for 4,000 weeks, so it's about coming to terms with that and yeah, making the best use of your time, I would say. So it's a little bit more spiritual than productivity, but it does touch on productivity.
Oh, God. Okay, I did not know that. That's actually ultra interesting. Wow, okay. Okay, wow. Threw me off with that answer. Okay, favorite TV show?
Ooh, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She's fabulous. I hope I'll be like her one day.
Okay. Who is she? Is she, I have no idea who she is. I don't want to make guesses.
I think it's set in the 60s, in New York. She's a, you know, Jewish lady, marries a Jewish man, you know, housewife. And then she becomes a stand-up comedian, gets divorced and kind of breaks all the rules.
Oh, I love it.
And she's awesome. Yeah.
Okay, I love it. Sold me on that part. Favorite animal?
Gorillas. And I recently actually just went gorilla trekking. So
gorilla trekking?
Yeah.
What is that?
I was in Uganda.
Oh.
You go in and see the gorillas in their natural habitat.
I've never heard of that. Wow. Okay. These are like
it was
like valley
a bucket list trip.
Super interesting. Okay. I just recently met someone who came from Uganda. He said it was a great trip. So gorilla trekking, heard of it.
Highly recommend.
Okay. Interesting. Favorite comfort food?
Pasta.
Makes sense. No questions on that. And then best way to spend a calm Sunday morning. How does Darcy spend her Sunday mornings? The best ones.
I will plug my neighborhood in London, Bermondsey. I love it. Going to my favorite bakery, getting a croissant and hanging out there.
Simple pleasures of life, am I right?
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, Darcy, the last part of the podcast was extremely interesting. A lot of facts about gorillas and books and avocado toppings on pizza I have not heard before. But jokes aside, super interesting pod. Got to learn a lot about how you operate, how the fund operates, and you dropped some really good value bombs. So I love it. Thanks so much for coming on board.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for everything, Darcy. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, Darcy really gave us a reality check back there about how to think about VC platform. It's crucial to not get lost in all the noise. And when things get tough, think back to your USP and dial up the things that actually do push the needle for your fund and for your founders. Pretty important. And just overall, how she described how her fund supports fintech founders was pretty interesting for me to listen to. And then learning how she herself entered the space from a non-finance background and then used her grit and creativity to add value from day one, honestly, was super motivational for me. I don't know about you guys, but it was very interesting being live on that episode with her and just listening to her talk about it. It was super cool. But guys, most importantly, and just want you to keep this in mind, no matter what happens, always remember to try avocado on pizza.